Please help me welcome General Robin Graham.
It's actually quite embarrassing to be introduced, especially on a day like today. Thank you for this gracious invite to speak. Today is a solemn day, but it's also a day when we as Americans stand united. And it should be a day when Americans remember our true heroes. Special thanks to the Bossier community leaders, to the municipal workers, our police officers, our firefighters, the first responders. Would you look around with me today to our first responders? Could you stand and give them a round of applause, please? The mayor already did it, but allow me to reflect back to that Tuesday morning 14 years ago on 11 September 2001, extreme Islamist terrorist hijacked 4 U.S. commercial airliners in order to destroy heavily populated and highly symbolic targets in the United States. They crashed into the Twin Towers, 110-story World Trade Center in New York. One crashed into the Pentagon. More than 3,000 people perished. As you mentioned, Mayor, the fourth aircraft was rushed by passengers, so the hijackers crashed into a Farron Field in Pennsylvania. The FAA grounded all airliners in the U.S. for several days. Homeland defense efforts immediately commenced with combat air patrols within the U.S. under the Noble Eagle operation. NORAD initiated combat aircraft with U.S. fighters over more than 30 American cities, while Navy fighters flew sorties off the Atlantic coast near New York. Following the September 11th attack on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon, the Department of Defense designated the military response as Operation Infinite Justice. The origins of the name can be traced back to the 1998 Operations Infinite Reach against Osama bin Laden's facilities in Afghanistan and Sudan in response to the bombings of the U.S. embassies in Kenya and Tanzania. On 25 September 2001, Operation Infinite Justice was renamed Operation Enduring Freedom. On 7 October 2001, a mix of strikes from land-based B-1 Lancers, the B-2 Spirit, and your own Barksdale B-52 bombers launched from both U.S., British ships, and submarines, signaling the start of Operation Enduring Freedom. The first airstrikes against the Taliban in Afghanistan took place because the Taliban provided a safe haven to the terrorists who masterminded, funded, and planned the 9/11 attacks. As many of you already know, Barksdale and Bossier City played a key role in the immediate aftermath of 9/11. While President Bush was visiting the Emma E. Booker Elementary School in Sarasota, Florida, the terrorists attacked our country. Consequently, President Bush immediately boarded Air Force One so that he could travel to an undisclosed location with the necessary secure communications required for him to conduct with his leadership team our nation's terrible business that day. Barksdale Air Force Base was selected. Air Force One landed at approximately 10:47 local, and President Bush entered 8th Air Force Headquarters, where he consulted with Vice President Cheney, watched developments on national TV, and he worked on a national address. The address was given from the Hall of Honor in 8th Air Force at approximately 11:45. He then departed Barksdale and flew to STRATCOM, Strategic Command Headquarters, in Omaha before he eventually returned to D.C. There are events that happen in a person's lifetime that will never be forgotten. In those rare occasions, a person remembers where they were, who they were with, and even the time of day when they heard the news. For those of us who are old enough to understand the vicious attack of 9/11, it was one of those events that shook us to our very core. I see in the room today, this gathering, there are some World War II veterans. They tragically had to live through 2 days like that. I got a phone call at 7:45 in the morning. I'd been out night flying the night before. I was stationed at Nellis Air Force Base in Las Vegas. And I said, was told to turn on the TV. And I watched the aftermath of the two airplanes crashing into the building. We were immediately recalled to the command post. I was a colonel at the time. I commanded the United States Air Force Weapons School. My boss said, "We've got an inbound airliner that's not talking to anyone. We don't know if it's headed for Hoover Dam or Los Angeles. Can you scramble some airplanes and some crews together?" I said, "I'll try, boss." And I went back to the weapons school and we put four airplanes, pulled the pin out of where the gun bay is, loaded some live weapons. I said, "Who do I talk to when I get airborne?" He says, "Don't worry about that. Just go get airborne. Call us on tower. We'll direct you." So me and three others put our gear on, and as we were running to the airplane to go intercept an airliner, one of my wingmen looked at me and he said, "Boss, do you know what they're asking us to go do?" And I said, "Harry, we have no time to worry about that right now." We got in the airplane, we started engines, we taxied, and right before we were rolling down the runway, we were called to come back in. I've reflected on that day many times. Could you ever have imagined on September 10th, 2001, getting ready to take off on a combat mission over your own country, where the enemy was U.S. citizens on a U.S. aircraft that you had to shoot down to prevent it from crashing into a major metropolitan area? Try to envision that one as a scenario. So it shook us to our core. On September 10th, I might submit 2001, Americans considered celebrities, actors, actresses, sports stars as heroes. Then our country was attacked. As the Twin Towers burned, thousands of people rushed down stairwells trying to escape death and destruction. Then America's true heroes emerged. Our firefighters, our police officers, our EMTs, all rushed towards death and destruction, just like our military men and women would do in the days that followed. It is no coincidence that this memorial station between the police and fire departments, symbolic of the first responders who sacrificed their lives, the true heroes. Heroes like Wells Crowder. Wells was a 24-year-old equities trader who was working on the 104th floor of the South Tower when the attack occurred. After the first plane hit the North Tower, being a thoughtful son, Wells called his mom to let her know that he was okay. Wells was far from being done that day, but that was the last time his mother would ever hear from her son. For months, Wells' mom agonized over what had happened to her son during that final hour. In the following months, when the survivor stories began to emerge, the heroics of her son's final hour came to light. When the stories emerged of a guardian angel covering his mouth with a red bandana, taking control and directing people in the smoke-filled floor of the South Tower to the stairwells, Wells' mom knew in her heart that the guardian angel with the red bandana was her son. You see, Wells was born the oldest of three children and followed his father's footsteps, always carrying a bandana in his back pocket. Wells preferred red and his father carried a blue one. Wells also followed his father by joining as a volunteer firefighter. On September 11th, 2001, Wells' firefighting training kicked in. One of his last acts of his life was carrying a woman on his back down 15 floors before returning to help others. In March 2002, the New York Medical Examiner's Office contacted Wells' parents and told them Wells' body had been found intact, alongside firefighters and emergency workers then running a command center in the South Tower's lobby. Authorities speculated that when Wells died, he was aiding the rescue effort when the South Tower building fell. Wells Crowder was one of our 9/11 heroes, and he shouldn't be forgotten. Shortly after 9/11, the phrase "never forget" began to circulate. This phrase has been used before. It originated after the Holocaust and has been used for multiple tragedies since then. It serves as a reminder to learn from those tragedies, as well as honor those who we lost. That is why this memorial will go a long way to ensure people never forget the lives lost and our heroes and who our heroes really are. Let's never forget. In my short time in Bossier City and Shreveport, I have come to realize that this wonderful community never forgets its heroes. And you always remember our airmen. You welcome us into your community, your homes, your churches. And I want you to know that our airmen feel the support. Folks, freedom is not free. It's paid through the sacrifices of brave men and women who serve. Those are the people we should call heroes. It's not just the military. It's our public servants, our law enforcement, our firefighters, our first responders, and citizens who support this great nation with us. All its flaws, this nation is worth fighting for. Do you not agree?
Amen.
As we gather on the 14th anniversary of one of the nation's most tragic days, let us reflect and recommit ourselves to a call first issued by the 35th President of the United States during his inaugural address in 1961. Listen closely. Now the trumpet summons again, not as a call to bear arms, the arms we need, not as a call to battle, though embattled we are, but a call to bear the burden of a long twilight struggle, year in and year out, rejoicing in hope, patience in tribulation, a struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself. But let every nation know, whether it wishes us will or ill, that we shall pay any price, bear any burden, meet any hardship, support any friend, oppose any foe, to assure the survival and the success of liberty. Does that sound like today, folks? Bossier City, thank you for your support, and thank you for remembering our heroes. Again, never forget. Thank you.